I told you. Rudy Junkins raised his hand and smiled disarmingly. For one weird second, Arnie thought he was going to say, peace, as Dennis sometimes did when things got heavy. Damaged it. Sorry.
Sure,
Arnie said. Anyhow, according to what your girlfriend said, one of the perpetrators, well, defecated on the dashboard. I would have thought you would have been mad as hell. I would have thought you would have reported it. Now the smile faded altogether, and Junkins looked at Arnie soberly, even sternly. Arnie's cool gray eyes met Junkins's brown ones.
Shit wipes off, he said finally. You want to know something, Mr. Rudy? You want me to tell you something?
Sure, son.
When I was 1½, I got hold of a fork and marked up an antique bureau that my mother had saved up for over a period of maybe 5 years. Saved up her pin money, that's what she said. I guess I racked the hell out of it in a very short time. Of course, I don't remember it, but she says she sat right down and bawled.
Arnie smiled a little.
Up until this year, I couldn't feature my mother doing that. Now, I think I can. Maybe I'm growing up a little. What do you think?
Junkins lit a cigarette. Am I missing the point, Arnie? Because I don't see it yet.
She said that she would rather have had me in diapers until I was 3 than have had me do that. Because she said, shit wipes off.
Arnie smiled.
You flush it away, and it's gone.
The way Moochie Welch is gone, Junkins asked.
I know nothing about that.
No?
No.
Scat's honor, Junkins asked. The question was humorous, but the eyes were not. They probed at Arnie, looking for the smallest break, a crucial flicker. Down the aisle, the fellow who had been putting on his winter snows dropped a tool on the concrete. It clanged musically, and the fellow chanted almost chorally, "Ah, shit on you, you whore!" Junkins and Arnie both glanced that way briefly, and the moment was broken.
"Sure, scout's honor," Arnie said. "Look, I suppose you have to do this. It's your job."
"Sure it's my job," Junkins agreed softly. "The boy was run over 3 times each way. He was meat. They scraped him up with a shovel."
"Come on,"
Arnie said sickly. His stomach did a lazy barrel roll. "Why? Isn't that what you're supposed to do with shit? Scrape it up with a shovel?"
"I had nothing to do with it,"
Arnie cried, and the man across the way, who had been tinkering with his muffler, looked up, startled. Arnie lowered his voice.
"I'm sorry. I just wish you'd leave me alone. You know damn well I didn't have anything to do with it. You just went over the whole car. If Christine had hit that Welch kid that many times and that hard, it would be all busted up. I know that much just from watching TV. And when I was taking Auto Shop 1 2 years ago, Mr. Smolnack said that the 2 best ways he knew to totally destroy a car's front end was to either hit a deer or a person. He was joking a little, but he wasn't kidding, if you know what I mean."
Arnie swallowed and heard a click in his throat, which was very dry. "Sure," Junkins said. "Your car looks all right. But you don't, kid. You look like a sleepwalker. You look absolutely fucked over. Pardon my French." He flicked his cigarette away. "You know something, Arnie?"
"What?"
"I think you're lying faster than a horse can trot." He slapped Christine's hood. "Or maybe I should say, faster than a Plymouth can run." Arnie looked at him, his hand on the outside mirror on the passenger side. He said nothing. "I don't think you're lying about killing the Welch boy, but I think you're lying about what they did to your car. Your girl said they mashed the crap out of it, and she's a hell of a lot more convincing than you are. She cried while she told me. She said there was broken glass everywhere. Where'd you buy the replacement glass, by the way?"
"McConnell's," Arnie said promptly, "in the burg.
Still got the receipt?
Tossed it out. But they'll remember you. Big order like that. They might, Arnie said, but I wouldn't count on it, Rudy. They're the biggest auto glass specialists west of New York and east of Chicago. That covers a lot of ground. They do yay business, and a lot of it's old cars.
Still, they'll have the paperwork.
I paid cash.
But your name will be on the invoice.
Nope,
Arnie said, and smiled a wintry smile.
Darnell's do-it-yourself garage. That way I got a 10% discount.
You got it all covered, don't you?
Lieutenant Junkins,
you're lying about the glass, too. Although I'll be goddamned if I know why.
You'd think Christ was lying on Calvary. That's what I think,
Arnie said angrily.
Since when is it a crime to buy replacement glass if someone busts up your windows, or pay cash, or get a discount?
Since never, Junkins said.
Then leave me be.
More important? I think you're lying about not knowing anything about what happened to the Welch boy. You know something. I want to know what.
I don't know anything, Arnie said.
What about...
I don't have anything more to say to you, Arnie said. I'm sorry.
All right, Junkins said, giving up so quickly that Arnie was immediately suspicious. He rummaged around in the sport coat he was wearing under his top coat and took out his wallet. Arnie saw that Junkins was carrying a gun in a shoulder holster and suspected Junkins had wanted him to see it. He produced a card and gave it to Arnie. I can be reached at either of those numbers. If you want to talk about anything. Anything at all. Arnie put the card in his breast pocket. Junkins took one more leisurely stroll around Christine.
Hell of a restoration job, he repeated.
He looked squarely at Arnie.
Why didn't you report it?
Arnie let out a low, shuddering sigh.
Because I thought that would be the end, he said. I thought they'd let off.
Yeah, Junkins said. I thought that might be it. Good night, son.
Good night.
Junkins started away, turned, came back. Think it over, he said. You really do look like hell, you know what I mean? You have a nice girl there. She's worried about you, and she feels bad about what happened to your car. Your dad's worried about you, too. I could get that even over the phone. Think it over, and then give me a call, son. You'll sleep better.
Arnie felt something trembling behind his lips, something small and tearful, something that hurt.
Junkins' brown eyes were kind. He opened his mouth. God alone knew what might have spilled out, and then a monstrous jab of pain walloped him in the back, making him straighten suddenly. It also had the effect of a slap on a hysteric. He felt calmer, clear-headed again.
Good night, he repeated. Good night, Rudy.
Junkins looked at him a moment longer, troubled, and then left. Arnie began to shake all over. The trembling started in his hands and spread up his forearms to his elbows, and then it was suddenly everywhere. He grabbed blindly for the door handle, found it at last, and slipped into Christine, into the comforting smells of car and fresh upholstery. He turned the key to ACC, the idiot lights glowed, and he felt for the radio dial. As he did so, his eyes fell on the swinging leather tab with RDL branded into it, and his dream recurred. With sudden, terrible force. The rotting corpse sitting where he was sitting now, the empty eye sockets staring out through the windshield, the finger bones gripping the wheel, the empty grin of the skull's teeth as Christine bore down on Moochie Welch, while the radio, tuned to WDIL, played Last Kiss by J. Frank Wilson and the Cavaliers. He suddenly felt sick. Puking sick, nausea fluttered sickeningly in his stomach and in the back of his throat. Arnie scrambled out of the car and ran for the head, his footfalls hammering crazily in his ears. He just made it. Everything came up. He vomited again and again until there was nothing left but sour spit. Lights danced in front of his eyes, his ears rang, and the muscles in his gut throbbed tiredly. He looked at his pale, harried face in the spotty mirror. at the dark circles under his eyes and the lank spill of hair across his forehead. Junkins was right. He looked like hell. But his pimples were all gone. He laughed crazily. He wouldn't give Christine up, no matter what. That was the one thing he wouldn't do. And suddenly he had to do it again, only there was nothing left to come up, only ripping, clenching dry heaves and that electric taste of spit in his mouth again. He had to talk to Lee. Quite suddenly, he had to talk to Lee. He let himself into Will's office, where the only sound was the thump of the time clock bolted on the wall, turning up fresh minutes. He dialed the Cabot's number from memory, but miscued twice because his fingers were trembling so badly. Lee herself answered, her voice sounding sleepy.
"Arnie? I have to talk to you, Lee. I have to see you. Arnie, it's almost 10 o'clock. I just got out of the shower and into bed. I was almost asleep. Please," he said, and shut his eyes. "Tomorrow," she said. "It can't be tonight. My folks wouldn't let me out so late.
It's only 10, and it's Friday."
"They really don't want me to see so much of you, Arnie. They liked you at first, and my dad still does, but they both think you've gotten a little spooky."
There was a long, long pause at Lee's end.
"I think you have, too," she said, finally.
"Does that mean you don't want to see me anymore?" he asked, dully. His stomach hurt. His back hurt. Everything hurt.
"No," now the faintest reproach crept into her voice. "I was kind of getting the idea that you didn't want to see me. Not at school, and nights you're always down there at the garage, working on your car?"
"That's all done," he said, and then, with a monstrous effort, "It's the car I want to... Ah, God damn it!"
He grabbed at his back, where there had been another huge bolt of pain, and got only a handful of back brace. "Arnie?" she was alarmed. "Are you all right?"
"Yeah. I had a twinge in my back."
"What were you going to say?"
"Tomorrow," he said, "we'll drive over to Baskin-Robbins and have an ice cream and maybe do some Christmas shopping and have some supper and I'll have you home by 7 and I won't be weird. I promise."
She laughed a little, and Arnie felt a great sweeping relief. It was like balm. "You dummy."
"Does that mean okay?"
"Yes, it means okay." Lee paused, and then said softly, "I said my parents didn't want me to see so much of you. I didn't say I wanted that."
"Thanks," he said, struggling to keep his voice steady. "Thanks for that."
"What do you want to talk to me about?"
"Christine, I want to talk to you about her, and about my dreams, and about why I look like hell, and why I always want to listen to WDIL now, and about what I did that night after everyone was gone, the night I hurt my back. Oh, Lee, I want..."
Another slash of pain up his back like cat's claws.
"I think we just talked about it," he said.
"Oh." A slight, warm pause. "Good.
Lee? There'll be more time now. I promise. All the time you want."
And thought, because now, with Dennis in the hospital, you're all that's left. All that's left between me and...
"That's good," Lee said. "I love you."
"Goodbye, Arnie."
"Say it back," he wanted to shout suddenly. "Say it back, I need you to say it back."
But there was only the click of the phone in his ear. He sat behind Will's desk for a long time, head lowered, getting hold of himself. She didn't need to say it back every time he said it to her, did she? He didn't need reassurance that badly, did he? Did he? Arnie got up and went to the door.
She was coming out with him tomorrow. That was the important thing. They would do the Christmas shopping they had been planning on the day those shitters trashed Christine. They would walk and talk. They would have a good time. She would say she loved him.
"She'll say it," he whispered, standing in the doorway.
But halfway down the left-hand side of the garage, Christine sat like a mute and stupid denial, her grill poking forward as if hunting something. And the voice whispered out of his lower consciousness, the dark, questioning voice, "How did you hurt your back? How did you hurt your back? How did you hurt your back, Arnie?" It was a question he shrank from. He was afraid of the answer. Chapter 34. Lee and Christine. It was a gray day, threatening snow, but Arnie was right on both counts. They had a good time, and he wasn't weird. Mrs. Cabot had been at home when Arnie got there, and her initial reception was cool. But it was a long time, perhaps 20 minutes, before Lee came downstairs, wearing a caramel-colored sweater that clung lovingly to her breasts, and a new pair of cranberry-colored slacks that clung lovingly to her hips. This inexplicable lateness in a girl who was almost always perfectly on time might have been on purpose. Arnie asked her later, and Lee denied it with an innocence that was perhaps just a little too wide-eyed. But in any case, it served its purpose. Arnie could be charming when he had to be, and he went to work on Mrs. Cabot with a will. Before Lee finally came bouncing downstairs, twisting her hair into a ponytail, Mrs. Cabot had thawed. She had gotten Arnie a Pepsi Cola and was listening raptly as he regaled her with tales of the chess club. "It's the only civilized extracurricular activity I've ever heard of," she told Lee, and smiled approvingly at Arnie. "Boring," Lee trumpeted. She put an arm around Arnie's waist and smacked him loudly on the cheek. "Lee Cabot! Sorry, Mumps, but he looks cute in lipstick, doesn't he? Wait a minute, Arnie, I've got a Kleenex. Don't claw at it." She dug in her purse for a tissue. Arnie looked at Mrs. Cabot and rolled his eyes. Natalie Cabot put a hand to her mouth and giggled. The rapprochement between her and Arnie was complete. Arnie and Lee went to Baskin-Robbins, where an initial awkwardness left over from the phone conversation of the night before finally melted away. Arnie had had a vague fear that Christine would not run well, or that Lee would find something nasty to say about her. She had never liked riding in his car. Both were needless worries. Christine ran like a fine Swiss watch, and the only things Lee had to say about her rang of pleasure and amazement. "I never would have believed it," she said, as they drove out of the ice cream parlor's small parking lot and joined the flow of traffic headed toward the Monroeville Mall. "You must have worked like a dog."
"It wasn't as bad as it probably looked to you," Arnie said. "Mind some music?"
"No, of course not." Arnie turned on the radio. The silhouettes were kip-kipping and boom-booming through Get a Job. Lee made a face.
"D.I.L., yuck. Can I change it?"
"Be my guest." Lee switched it to a Pittsburgh rock station and got Billy Joel. "You may be right," Billy admitted cheerfully. "I may be crazy." This was followed by Billy telling his girl Virginia the Catholic girl started much too late. It was the block party weekend. Now, Arnie thought, now she'll start to hitch, back off, something. But Christine only went rolling along. The mall was thronged with hectic but mostly good-natured shoppers. The last frantic and sometimes ugly Christmas rush was better than 2 weeks off. The Yuletide spirit was still new enough to be novel, and it was possible to look at the tinsel strung through the wide mall hallways without feeling sour and Ebenezer Scroogey. The steady ringing of the Salvation Army Santa's bells had not yet become a guilty annoyance. They still chanted good tidings and goodwill, rather than the monotonous, metallic chant of "the poor have no Christmas, the poor have no Christmas, the poor have no Christmas," that Arnie always seemed to hear as the day grew closer and both the shop girls and the Salvation Army Santas grew more harried and hollow-eyed. They held hands until the parcels grew too many for that, and then Arnie complained good-naturedly about how she was turning him into her beast of burden. As they were going down to the lower level and B. Dalton, where Arnie wanted to look for a book on toy making for Dennis Gilder's old man, Lee noticed that it had begun to snow. They stood for a moment at the window of the glassed-in stairwell, looking out like children. Arnie took her hand, and Lee looked at him, smiling. He could smell her skin, clean and a bit soapy. He could smell the fragrance of her hair. He moved his head forward a bit. She moved hers a bit toward him. They kissed, lightly, and she squeezed his hand. Later, after the bookstore, they stood above the rink in the center of the mall, watching the skaters as they dipped and pirouetted and swooped to the sound of Christmas carols. It was a very good day, right up until the moment that Lee Cabot almost died. She almost surely would have died, if not for the hitchhiker. They had been on their way back then, and an early December twilight had long since turned to snowy dark. Christine, sure-footed as usual, purred easily through the 4 inches of fresh light powder. Arnie had made a reservation for an early dinner at the British Lion Steakhouse, Libertyville's only really good restaurant. But the time had gotten away from them, and they had agreed on a quick-to-go meal from the McDonald's on JFK Drive. Lee had promised her mother she would be in by 8:30 because the Cabots were having friends in, and it had been 7:45 when they left the mall.
"Just as well," Arnie said. "I'm damn near broke anyway."
The headlights picked out the hitchhiker standing at the intersection of Route 17 and JFK Drive, still 5 miles outside of Libertyville. His black hair was shoulder length, speckled with snow, and there was a duffel bag between his feet. As they approached him, the hitchhiker held up a sign painted with Day-Glow letters. It read, "Libertyville, PA." As they drew closer, he flipped it over. The other side read, "Non-psycho college student." Lee burst out laughing.
"Let's give him a ride, Arnie."
Arnie said,
"When they go out of their way to advertise their non-psychotic status, that's when you gotta look out. But okay."
He pulled over. That evening, he would have tried to catch the moon in a bushel basket if Lee had asked him to give it a shot. Christine rolled smoothly to the verge of the road, tires barely slipping. But as they stopped, static blared across the radio, which had been playing some hard rock tune, and when the static cleared, there was the Big Bopper, singing Chantilly Lace.
"What happened to the block party weekend?" Lee asked as the hitchhiker ran toward them.
"I don't know,"
Arnie said. But he knew. It had happened before. Sometimes all that Christine's radio would pick up was WDIL. It didn't matter what buttons you pushed or how much you fooled with the FM converter under the dashboard. It was WDIL or nothing. He suddenly felt that stopping for the hitchhiker had been a mistake. But it was too late for second thoughts now. The fellow had opened one of Christine's rear doors, tossed his duffel bag onto the floor, and slipped in after it. A blast of cold air and a swirl of snow came in with him.
"Aw, man, thanks," he sighed. "My fingers and toes all took off from Miami Beach about 20 minutes ago. They must have gone somewhere anyway, because I sure can't feel them anymore." "Thank my lady," Arnie said shortly.
"Thank you, ma'am," the hitchhiker said, tipping an invisible hat gallantly.
"Don't mention it," Lee said, and smiled. "Merry Christmas."
"Same to you," the hitchhiker said. "Although you'd never know there was such a thing if you'd been standing out there trying to hook a ride tonight. People just breeze by and then they're gone. Boom."
He looked around appreciatively.
"Nice car, man. Hell of a nice car."
"Thanks," Arnie said.
"You restore it yourself?"
"Yeah."
Lee was looking at Arnie, puzzled. His earlier expansive mood had been replaced by a curtness that was not like his usual self at all. On the radio, the Big Bopper finished, and Richie Valens came on, doing La Bamba. The hitchhiker shook his head and laughed.
"First a Big Bopper, then Richie Valens. Must be Death Night on the radio. Good old WDIL.
"What do you mean?" Lee asked. Arnie snapped the radio off.
"They died in a plane crash with Buddy Holly."
"Oh," Lee said in a small voice. Perhaps the hitchhiker also sensed the change in Arnie's mood. He fell silent and meditative in the back seat. Outside, the snow began to fall faster and harder. The first good storm of the season had come in. At length, the golden arches twinkled up out of the snow.
"Do you want me to go in, Arnie?"
Lee asked. Arnie had gone nearly as quiet as stone, turning aside her bright attempts at conversation with mere grunts.
"I will," he said and pulled in. "What do you want?"
"Just a hamburger and french fries, please." She had intended to go the whole hog, Big Mac, shake, even the cookies, but her appetite seemed to have shrunk away to nothing. Arnie parked, in the yellow light flaring from the squat brick building's undersides. His face looked jaundiced and somehow diseased. He turned around, arm trailing over the seat.
"Can I grab you something?"
"No, thanks," the hitchhiker said. "Folks will be waiting supper. Can't disappoint my mom. She kills the fatted calf every time I come..." The chunk of the door cut off his final word. Arnie had gotten out and was headed briskly across to the inn door, his boots kicking up little puffs of new snow.
"Is he always that cheery?" the hitchhiker asked. "Or does he get taciturn sometimes?"
"He's very sweet," Lee said firmly. She was suddenly nervous. Arnie had turned off the engine and taken the keys, and she was left alone with this stranger in the back seat. She could see him in the rearview mirror, and suddenly his long black hair, tangled by the wind, his scruff of beard, and his dark eyes made him seem Manson-like and wild.
"Where do you go to school?"
she asked. Her fingers were plucking at her slacks, and she made them stop.
"Pitt,"
the hitchhiker said, and no more. His eyes met hers in the mirror, and Lee dropped hers hastily to her lap. Cranberry red slacks. She had worn them because Arnie had once told her he liked them, probably because they were the tightest pair she owned, even tighter than her Levi's. She suddenly wished she had worn something else, something that could be considered provocative by no stretch of the imagination, a grain sack, maybe. She tried to smile. It was a funny thought, all right, a grain sack. Get it? Ha ha, ho ho, what a knee slapper. But no smile came. There was no way she could keep from admitting it to herself. Arnie had left her alone with this stranger. As punishment? It had been her idea to pick him up. And now she was scared.
"Bad vibes,"
the hitchhiker said suddenly, making her actually catch her breath. His words were flat and final. She could see Arnie through the plate glass window, standing fifth or sixth in line. He wouldn't get up to the counter for a while. She found herself imagining the hitchhiker suddenly clamping his gloved hands around her throat. Of course, she could reach the horn ring, but would the horn sound? She found herself doubting it for no sane reason at all. She found herself thinking she could hit the horn 99 times and it would honk satisfyingly. But if on the 100th she was being strangled by this hitchhiker, on whose behalf she had interceded, the horn wouldn't blow. Because Christine didn't like her. In fact, she believed that Christine hated her guts. It was as simple as that. Crazy, but simple.
Pardon me?
She glanced back in the rearview mirror and was immeasurably relieved to see that the hitchhiker wasn't looking at her at all. He was glancing around the car. He touched the seat cover with his palm, then lightly brushed the roof upholstery with the tips of his fingers.
"Bad vibes," he said, and shook his head. "This car... I don't know why, but I get bad vibes."
"Do you?"
she asked, hoping her voice sounded neutral.
"Yeah. I got stuck in an elevator once when I was a little kid. Ever since then, I get attacks of claustrophobia. I never had one in a car before, but boy, I got one now. In the worst way. I think you could light a kitchen match on my tongue. That's how dry my mouth is."
He laughed, a short, embarrassed laugh.
"If I wasn't already so late, I'd just get out and walk. No offense to you or your guy's car," he added hastily,
and when Lee looked back into the mirror, his eyes did not seem wild at all, only nervous. Apparently he wasn't kidding about the claustrophobia, and he no longer looked like Charlie Manson to her at all. Lee wondered how she could have been so stupid, except she knew how, and why. She knew perfectly well. It was the car. All day long, she had felt perfectly okay riding in Christine, but now her former nervousness and dislike were back. She had merely projected her feelings onto the hitchhiker because, well, because you could be scared and nervous about some guy you just picked up off the road. But it was insane to be scared by a car, an inanimate construct of steel and glass and plastic and chrome. That wasn't just a little eccentric. It was insane.
"You don't smell anything, do you?"
he asked abruptly.
"Smell anything?"
"A bad smell?"
"No, not at all."
Her fingers were plucking at the bottom of her sweater now, pulling off wisps of angora. Her heart was knocking unpleasantly in her chest.
"It must be part of your claustrophobia, what's-its?"
"I guess so."
but she could smell it. Under the good new smells of leather and upholstery, there was a faint odor. Something like gone-over eggs, just a whiff. A lingering whiff.
Mind if I crank the window down a little?
If you want, Lee said, and found it took some effort to keep her voice steady and casual. Suddenly, her mind's eye showed her the picture that had been in the paper yesterday morning. A picture of Moochie Welch, probably culled from the yearbook. The caption beneath read, Peter Welch, victim of fatal hit-and-run incident that police feel may have been murder. The hitchhiker unrolled his window 3 inches, and crisp, cold air came in, driving that smell away. Inside McDee's, Arnie had reached the counter and was giving his order. Looking at him, Lee experienced such an odd swirl of love and fear that she felt nauseated by the mixture. For the second or third time lately, she found herself wishing that she had fixed on Dennis first. Dennis, who seemed so safe and sensible. She turned her thoughts away from that.
Just tell me if it gets cold on you, the hitchhiker said apologetically. I'm weird, I know it.
He sighed.
Sometimes I think I never should have given up drugs, you know?
Lee smiled. Arnie came out with a white bag, skidded a little in the snow, and then got behind the wheel.
Cold like an icebox in here, he grunted.
Sorry, man, the hitchhiker said from the back and rolled the window up again. Lee waited to see if that smell would come back, but now she could smell nothing but leather, upholstery, and the faint aroma of Arnie's aftershave.
Here you go, Lee.
He gave her a burger, fries, and a small Coke. He had gotten himself a Big Mac.
Wanna thank you again for the ride, man, the hitchhiker said. You can just drop me off at the corner of JFK and Center if that's cool.
Fine, Arnie said shortly and pulled out. The snow was coming down even more heavily now, and the wind had begun to whoop. For the first time, Lee felt Christine skid a bit as she felt for a grip on the wide street, which was now almost deserted. They were less than 15 minutes from home. With the smell gone, Lee discovered that her appetite had come back. She wolfed half of her hamburger, drank some Coke, and stifled a burp with the back of her hand. The corner of Center and JFK, marked with a war memorial, came up on the left, and Arnie pulled over, pumping the brakes lightly so Christine wouldn't slide.
Have a nice weekend, Arnie said.
He sounded more like his usual self now. Maybe all he needed was some food, Lee thought, amused.
Same goes to both of you, the hitchhiker said, and have a Merry Christmas.
You too, Lee said.
She took another bite of her hamburger, chewed, swallowed, and felt it lodge halfway down her throat. Suddenly, she couldn't breathe. The hitchhiker was getting out. The noise of the door opening was very loud. The sound of the latch clicking sounded like the thud of tumblers falling in a bank vault. The sound of the wind was like a factory whistle.
This is stupid, I know, but I can't, Arnie, I can't breathe.
I'm choking, she tried to say, and what came out was a faint, fuzzy sound that she was sure the whine of the wind must have covered. She clawed at her throat, and it felt swollen and throbbing in her hand. She tried to scream, no breath to scream, no breath, Arnie, I can't, at all, and she could feel it in there, a warm lump of burger and bun. She tried to cough it up, and it wouldn't come. The dashboard lights, bright green, circular, cat, like the eyes of a cat, dear God, I can't breathe, watching her, God, I can't breathe, can't breathe, can't. Her chest began to pound for air. Again, she tried to cough up the lump of half-chewed burger and bun in her throat, but it wouldn't come. Now the sound of the wind was bigger than the world, bigger than any sound she had ever heard before, and Arnie was finally turning away from the hitchhiker to look at her. He was turning in slow motion, his eyes widening almost comically, and even his voice seemed too loud, like thunder, the voice of Zeus speaking to some poor mortal from behind a massy sky stack of thunderclouds.
Lee, are you... What the hell? She's choking. Oh, my God, she's...
He reached for her in slow motion, and then he drew his hands back, immobilized by panic.
Oh, Help me, help me, for God's sake, do something, I'm dying. Oh, my dear God, I'm choking to death on a McDonald's hamburger. Arnie, why don't you help me?
And of course, she knew why. He drew back because Christine didn't want her to have any help. This was Christine's way of getting rid of her. Christine's way of getting rid of the other woman, the competition. And now the dashboard instruments really were eyes. Great, round, unemotional eyes watching her choke to death. Eyes she could see only through a growing jitter of black dots. Dots that burst and spread as,
Mama, oh my dear, this... I'm dying, and she sees me. She's alive, alive, alive. Oh, Mama, my God, Christine is alive.
Arnie reached for her again. Now she had begun to thrash on the seat, her chest heaving spasmodically as she clawed at her throat. Her eyes were bulging. Her lips had begun to turn blue. Arnie was pounding her ineffectually on the back and yelling something. He grabbed her shoulder, apparently meaning to pull her out of the car, and then he suddenly winced and straightened, his hands going involuntarily to the small of his back. Lee twitched and thrashed. The blockage in her throat felt huge and hot and throbbing. She tried again to cough it up more weakly this time. The lump didn't budge. Now the whistle of the wind was beginning to fade. Everything was beginning to fade. But her need for air didn't seem so awful. Maybe she was dying, but suddenly it didn't seem so bad. Nothing was so bad except for those green eyes staring at her from the instrument panel. They weren't unemotional anymore. Now they were blazing with hate and triumph.
Oh, my God, I am heartily sorry for having offended thee. I am for offending. This is my act of...
Arnie had reached across from the driver's side. Now Lee's door was suddenly jerked open and she was spilled sideways into a brutal, cutting cold. The air partially revived her, made her struggle for breath seem important again, but the obstruction wouldn't move. It just wouldn't move. From far away, Arnie's voice thundering sternly, the voice of Zeus.
What are you doing? Get your hands off her!
Arms around her, strong arms, the wind on her face, snow swirling in her eyes.
Oh, my God, hear me, a sinner, this is my act of contrition. I am heartily sorry for having offended. Oh, ow, what are you doing? My ribs hurts. What are you...
And suddenly there were arms around her, crushing, and a pair of hard hands were clasped together in a knot just below her breasts, in the hollow of her solar plexus. And suddenly one thumb popped up, the thumb of a hitchhiker signaling for a ride. Only the thumb drove painfully into her breastbone. At the same time, the grip of the arms tightened brutally. She felt caught.
Oh, you're breaking my... ribs!
In a gigantic bear hug, her whole diaphragm seemed to heave, and something flew out of her mouth with the force of a projectile. It landed in the snow, a wet chunk of bun and meat.
Let her go!
Arnie was shouting as he slipped and slid around Christine's rear deck to where the hitchhiker held Lee's limp body like a life-sized marionette.
Let her go! You're killing her!
Lee began to breathe in great, tearing gasps. Her throat and lungs seemed to burn in rivers of fire with each gulp of the cold, wonderful air. She was dimly aware that she was sobbing. The brutal bear hug relaxed, and the hands let her go.
Are you okay, girl? Are you all...
Then Arnie was reaching past her, grabbing for the hitchhiker. He turned toward Arnie, his long black hair flying in the wind, and Arnie hit him in the mouth. The hitchhiker flailed backward, boots slipping in the snow, and landed on his back. Fresh snow, as fine and dry as confectioner's sugar, puffed up around him. Arnie advanced, fists held up, eyes slitted. She took another convulsive breath. Oh, it hurt. It was like being stabbed with knives, and screamed,
"What are you doing? Arnie, stop it!"
He turned toward her, dazed.
"Huh? Lee?
He saved my life! What are you hitting him for?"
The effort was too much, and the black dots began to spiral up before her eyes again. She could have leaned against the car, but she didn't want to go near it, didn't want to touch it. The dashboard instruments. Something had happened to the dashboard instruments. Something.
Eyes. They turned into eyes she didn't want to think about.
She staggered to a lamppost instead and hung onto it like a drunk, head down, panting. A soft, tentative arm went around her waist.
Lee? Honey? Are you all right?
She turned her head slightly and saw his miserable, scared face. She burst into tears. The hitchhiker approached them carefully, wiping his bloody mouth on the sleeve of his jacket.
"Thank you,"
Lee said between harsh, swift breaths. The pain was ebbing a trifle now, and the hard, cold wind was soothing on her hot face.
"I was choking, I think. I think I would have died if you hadn't..."
Too much. The black dots again, all sounds fading into an eerie wind tunnel again. She put her head down and waited for it to pass.
"It's the Heimlich maneuver," the hitchhiker said. "They make you learn it when you go to work in the cafeteria at school. Make you practice on a rubber dummy, Daisy May, they call her, and you do it, but you don't have any idea if it'll, you know, work on a real person or not."
His voice was shaky, jumping in pitch from low to high and back to low again, like the voice of a kid entering puberty. His voice seemed to want to laugh or cry something, and even in the uncertain light and the heavily falling snow, Lee could see how pallid his face was.
"I never thought I'd actually have to use it. Works pretty good. Did you see that fucking piece of meat fly?"
The hitchhiker wiped his mouth and looked blankly at the thin froth of blood on the palm of his hand.
"I'm sorry I hit you,"
Arnie said. He sounded close to tears.
"I was just... I was... Sure, man, I know."
He clapped Arnie on the shoulder.
"No harm, no foul. Girl, are you all right?"
"Yes,"
Lee said. Her breath was coming evenly now. Her heart was slowing down. Only her legs were bad. They were so much helpless rubber.
"My God," she thought. "I could be dead now. If we hadn't picked that guy up, and we almost didn't."
It occurred to her that she was lucky to be alive. This cliché struck her forcibly with a stupid, undeniable power that made her feel faint. She began to cry harder. When Arnie led her back toward the car, she came with him, her head on his shoulder.
"Well,"
the hitchhiker said uncertainly,
"I'll be off."
"Wait," Lee said. "What's your name? You saved my life. I'd like to know your name."
"Barry Gottfried," the hitchhiker said. "At your service."
Again, he swept off an imaginary hat.
"Lee Cabot," she said. "This is Arnie Cunningham. Thank you again."
"For sure," Arnie added. But Lee heard no real thanks in his voice, only that shakiness.
He handed her into the car and suddenly the smell assaulted her, attacked her. Nothing mild this time, much more than just a whiff underneath. It was the smell of rot and decomposition, high and noxious. She felt a mad fright invade her brain, and she thought, it is the smell of her fury. The world slipped sideways in front of her. She leaned out of the car and threw up. Then everything there went gray for a little while.
"Are you sure you're all right?"
Arnie asked her for what seemed to be the 100th time. It would also have to be for one of the last, Lee realized with some relief. She felt very, very tired. There was a dull, throbbing pain in her chest and another one at her temples.
"I'm fine now."
"Good, good."
He moved irresolutely, as if wanting to go but not sure it would be right yet. Perhaps not until he had asked his seemingly eternal question at least once more. They were standing in front of the Cabot house. Oblongs of yellow light spilled from the windows and lay smoothly on the fresh and unmarked snow. Christine stood at the curb, idling, showing parking lights.
"You scared me when you fainted like that," Arnie said.
"I didn't faint. I only got fogged in for a few minutes."
"Well, you scared me. I love you, you know."
She looked at him gravely.
"Do you?"
"Of course I do, Lee. You know I do."
She drew in a deep breath. She was tired. But it had to be said. And said right now, because if she didn't say it now, what had happened would seem completely ridiculous by morning light. Or maybe more than ridiculous. By morning light, the idea would likely seem mad. A smell that came and went, like the moldering stench in a gothic horror story, dashboard instruments that turned into eyes, and most of all, the insane feeling that the car had actually tried to kill her. By tomorrow, even the fact that she had almost choked to death would be nothing but a vague ache in her chest and the conviction that it had been nothing, really. Not a close call at all. Except it was all true. And Arnie knew it was. Yes, some part of him did. And it had to be said. Now.
"Yes, I think you do love me," she said slowly.
She looked at him steadily.
"But I won't go anywhere with you again in that car. And if you really love me, you'll get rid of it."
The expression of shock on his face was so large and so sudden that she might have struck him in the face.
"What? What are you talking about, Lee?"
Was it shock that had caused that slapped expression? Or was some of it guilt?
"You heard what I said. I don't think you'll get rid of it. I don't know if you even can anymore. But if you want to go someplace with me, Arnie, we go on the bus, or thumb a ride, or fly, but I'm never going to ride in your car again. It's a death trap."
There. She had said it. It was out. Now the shock on his face was turning to anger. The blind, obdurate sort of anger she had seen on his face so frequently lately. Not just over the big things, but over the little ones as well. A woman going through a traffic light on the yellow. A cop who held up traffic just before it was their turn to go. But it came to her now with all the force of a revelation that his anger, corrosive and so unlike the rest of Arnie's personality, was always associated with the car, with Christine.
"If you love me, you'll get rid of it," he repeated. "You know who you sound like?"
"No, Arnie."
"My mother. That's who you sound like."
"I'm sorry."
She would not allow herself to be drawn. Neither would she defend herself with words, or end it by just going into the house. She might have been able to if she didn't feel anything for him. But she did. Her original impressions, that behind the quiet shyness, Arnie Cunningham was good and decent and kind, and maybe sexy as well, had not changed much. It was the car. That was all. That was the change. It was like watching a strong mind slowly give way under the influence of some evil, corroding, addictive drug. Arnie ran his hands through his snow-dusted hair, a characteristic gesture of bewilderment and anger.
"You had a bad choking spell in the car. Okay. I can understand that you don't feel great about it, but it was the hamburger, Lee. That's all. Maybe not even that. Maybe you were trying to talk while you were chewing or inhaled at just the wrong second or something. You might as well blame Ronald McDonald. People choke on their food every now and then, that's all. Sometimes they die. You didn't, thank God for that, but to blame my car."
Yes, it all sounded perfectly plausible, and was. Except that something was going on behind Arnie's gray eyes. A frantic something that was not precisely a lie, but rationalization. A willful turning away from the truth?
"Arnie," she said, "I'm tired, and my chest hurts, and I've got a headache, and I think I've only got the strength to say this once. Will you listen?"
"If it's about Christine, you're wasting your breath," he said,
and that stubborn, mulish look was on his face again.
"It's crazy to blame her, and you know it is."
"Yes, I know it's crazy. And I know I'm wasting my breath," Lee said, "but I'm asking you to listen."
"I'll listen."
She took a deep breath, ignoring the pull in her chest. She looked at Christine, idling a plume of white vapor into the thickly falling snow, then looked hastily away. Now it was the parking lights that looked like eyes, the yellow eyes of a lynx.
"When I choked, when I was choking. The instrument panel, the lights on it, changed. They changed. They were... No, I won't go that far, but they looked like eyes.
He laughed, a short bark in the cold air. In the house, a curtain was pulled aside. Someone looked out, and then the curtain dropped back again.
If that hitchhiker, that Gottfried fellow, if he hadn't been there, I would have died, Arnie. I would have died.
She searched his eyes with her own and pushed ahead. Once, she told herself, I only have to say this once.
You told me that you worked in the cafeteria at LHS your first 3 years. I've seen the Heimlich maneuver poster on the door to the kitchen. You must have seen it too. But you didn't try that on me, Arnie. You were getting ready to clap me on the back. That doesn't work. I had a job in a restaurant back in Massachusetts, and the first thing they teach you, even before they teach you the Heimlich maneuver, is that clapping a choking victim on the back doesn't work.
What are you saying?
He asked, in a thin, out-of-breath voice. She didn't answer, only looked at him. He met her gaze for only a moment, and then his eyes, angry, confused, almost haunted, shifted away.
Lee, people forget things. You're right, I should have used it, but if you had the course, you know you can use it on yourself.
Arnie laced his hands together into a fist with one thumb sticking up and pressed against his diaphragm to demonstrate.
It's just that, in the heat of the moment, people forget.
Yes, they do. And you seem to forget a lot of things in that car. Like how to be Arnie Cunningham.
Arnie was shaking his head.
You need time to think this over, Lee. You need...
That is just what I don't need,
she said with a fierceness she wouldn't have believed she still had left in her.
I never had a supernatural experience in my life. I never even believed in stuff like that. But now I wonder just what's going on and what's happening to you. They looked like eyes, Arnie. And later, afterward, there was a smell. A horrible, rotten smell.
He recoiled.
You know what I'm talking about.
No, I don't have the slightest idea.
You just jumped as if the devil had twisted your ear.
You're imagining things, Arnie said hotly. A lot of things.
That smell was there. And there are other things as well. Sometimes your radio won't get anything but that oldie station.
Another flicker in his eyes, and a slight twitch at the left corner of his mouth.
And sometimes when we're making out, it just stalls, as if it didn't like it, as if the car didn't like it, Arnie.
You're upset,
he said, with ominous flatness.
Yes, I am upset, she said, beginning to cry. Aren't you?
The tears trickled slowly down her cheeks.
I think this is the end of it for us, Arnie. I loved you. But I think it's over. I really think it is. And that makes me feel so sad and so sorry. Your relationship with your parents has turned into an armed camp. You're running God knows what into New York and Vermont for that fat pig, Will Darnell, and that car. That car!
She could not say anything more. Her voice dissolved. She dropped her packages and bent blindly to pick them up. Exhausted and weeping, she succeeded in doing little more than stirring them around. He bent to help her, and she pushed at him roughly.
Leave them alone! I'll get them!
He stood up, his face pale and set. His expression was one of wooden fury, but his eyes... Oh, to Lee, his eyes seemed... lost.
All right, he said.
And now his voice roughened with his own tears.
Good. Join up with the rest of them if you want. You just saddle up and ride right along with all those other shitters. Who gives a tin shit?
He drew in a shivering breath, and a single hurt sob escaped him before he could clap a gloved hand brutally over his mouth. He began to walk backward toward the car. He reached out blindly behind himself for the Plymouth, and Christine was there.
Just as long as you know you're crazy, right out of your mind. So go on and play your games. I don't need you. I don't need any of you!
His voice rose to a thin scream, in devilish harmony with the wind.
I don't need you, so fuck off!
He rushed around to the driver's side. His feet slid, and he grabbed for Christine. She was there, and he didn't fall. He got in. The engine revved. The headlights came up in a huge white glare, and the Fury pulled out, rear tires spinning up a fog of snow. Now the tears came fast and hard as she stood watching the taillights fade to round, red periods and wink out as the car went around the corner. Her packages lay scattered at her feet. And then suddenly her mother was there, absurdly clothed in an open raincoat, green rubber boots, and her blue flannel nightgown.
Honey, what's wrong? Nothing,
Lee sobbed.
I almost choked to death. I smelled something that might have come from a freshly opened tomb, and I think... Yes, I think that somehow that car is alive. More alive every day. I think it's like some kind of horrible vampire, only it's taking Arnie's mind to feed itself. His mind and his spirit. Nothing. Nothing's wrong. I had a fight with Arnie, that's all. We pick up my things, would you?
They picked up Lee's parcels. The door shut behind them, and the night belonged to the wind and to the swiftly falling snow. By morning, there would be better than 8 inches. Arnie cruised until sometime after midnight, and later had no memory of it. The snow had filled the streets. They were deserted and ghostly. It was not a night for the great American motor car. Nevertheless, Christine moved through the deepening storm with sure-footed ease, even without snow tires. Now and then, the prehistoric shape of a snowplow loomed and was gone. The radio played. It was WDIL all the way across the dial. The news came on. Eisenhower had predicted at the AFL-CIO convention a future of labor and management marching harmoniously into the future together. Dave Beck had denied that the Teamsters Union was a front for the rackets. Rock and roller Eddie Cochran had been killed in a car crash while en route to London's Heathrow Airport. 3 hours of emergency surgery had failed to save his life. The Russians were rattling their ICBMs. WDIL played the oldies all week long, but on the weekends they got really dedicated. 50s newscasts. Wow. That was...
Never heard anything like that before.
A really neat idea. That was... Totally insane. Pretty neat. The weather promised more snow. Then music again. Bobby Darin singing Splish Splash. Ernie K. Doe singing Mother-in-Law. The Kalin twins singing When. The Wipers beat time. He looked to his right, and Roland D. LeBay was riding shotgun. Roland D. LeBay sat there in his green pants and a faded shirt of army twill, looking out of dark eye sockets. A beetle sat, preening within one.
You have to make them pay, Roland D. LeBay said. You have to make the shitters pay, Cunningham, every last fucking one of them.
Yes, Arnie whispered.
Christine hummed through the night, cutting the snow with fresh, sure tracks.
Yes, that's a fact.
And the Wipers nodded, back and forth.
Chapter 35. Now, this brief interlude. At Libertyville High, Coach Puffer had given way to Coach Jones, and football had given way to basketball. But nothing really changed. The LHS Cagers didn't do much better than the LHS Gridiron Warriors. The only bright spot was Lenny Barong, a three-sport man whose major one was basketball. Lenny stubbornly went about having the great year he needed to have if he was going to get the athletic scholarship to Marquette that he lusted after. Sandy Galton suddenly blew town. One day he was there, the next he was gone. His mother, a 45-year-old wino who didn't look a day over 60, did not seem terribly concerned. Neither did his younger brother, who pushed more dope than any other kid in Gornick Junior High. A romantic rumor that he had cut out for Mexico made the rounds at Libertyville High. Another, less romantic rumor also made the rounds, that Buddy Repperton had been on Sandy about something, and he felt it would be safer to make himself scarce. The Christmas break approached, and the school's atmosphere grew restless and rather thundery, as it always did before a long vacation.
The student body's overall grade average took its customary pre-Christmas dip. Book reports were turned in late and often bore a suspicious resemblance to jacket copy. After all, how many sophomore English students are apt to call The Catcher in the Rye this burning classic of post-war adolescence? Class projects were left half-done or undone. The percentage of detention periods given for kissing and petting in the hall skyrocketed, and bus for marijuana went way up as the Libertyville High School students indulged in a little pre-Christmas cheer. So a good many of the students were up. Teacher absenteeism was up. In the hallways and homerooms, Christmas decorations were up. Lee Cabot was not up. She flunked an exam.